collect per ride fees on from multiple users are on our shared rides. For Lyft Classic, for the Premier, for the Lyft Plus, for the larger vehicles, there's just one per ride fee collected per trip. Thank you again for the opportunity to provide testimony, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. That was a lot of information for both of you. You mentioned insurance for the drivers. What's being done so that drivers are not at risk of losing their personal policy when they're driving for your companies?
So in terms of the way that we approach insurance, there's a national insurance compromise that was agreed to by the TNCs, by the insurance providers, and those requirements are outlined within that compromise, and that's what our internal insurance policy is based on. So under that current policy, which is in place in every area where we operate ride-sharing in the country, we found that it's been sufficient in terms of covering drivers for incidents. With regard to their personal insurance, they're permitted to have TNCs on those insurance policies so long as they work with their insurance policy.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that. I mean, I've heard about it, but I don't know what's in it. So could you explain what is in this compromise and how it provides coverage for the driver?
So it's broken down into three periods, so period one, period two, and period three. Period one is when a driver has the app on and they're waiting for a ping to let them know that there's a ride and they're connected with someone. Period two is when they're actively going to a ride. They've already connected with a person and are traveling to pick them up. Period three is when that ride starts all the way until they get out of the vehicle. So during period one, Lyft is a primary insurer. Insuring party individuals, when they are onboarded, also have to provide proof of having insurance, their own personal insurance. So they have that, but we are primary during that period one. Additionally, in period two, that's when our $1 million insurance policy kicks in, and that's in effect for period one, or excuse me, for period two and for period three.
My understanding before was that if a private insurance, that the private policy says that you're not going to use your vehicle for commercial purposes. So how is that being taken care of with particularly in period one?
I'm not entirely familiar with the various products that are offered for each insurance provider. I'm sure that they're different. For drivers, if they are told by their insurance company that they have to abide by certain rules or add varying coverage to maintain their underlying policy, then we would expect that they would comply with that. However, a driver's lack of insurance, and even in the worst case scenario, is not going to prevent coverage from being provided by Lyft in period one, period two, or period three.
To the driver?
To the driver in terms of their...
If they get into an accident in period one, and then their personal insurance doesn't cover them driving commercially, Lyft will then take care of them?
Yes.
And same for Uber? Mm-hmm. And do you check to make sure that they have gotten the riders that they are supposed to get for driving their personal vehicle commercially?
We check to make sure that they do have insurance, so they have to provide a copy of their insurance. We take note of the expiration date, and if it's getting ready to expire, we will contact the driver. If it's not renewed, then we will offboard them. However, in terms of their relationship with their insurer, that's a contractual relationship that we are not party to, so we would not be able to check
into that. My understanding is that most regular insurance policies don't cover commercial driving. So why don't you check to make sure that they have the commercial rider?
Because we will always cover any incidents that occur.
But then they will lose their personal insurance.
I wouldn't know about the policies that are specific to each insurance provider.
Obviously, this is something we'll need to look into in the study.
Yeah, and I do believe that the staff at the Portland Bureau of Transportation are going to be doing a deep dive. We've worked extensively with them to provide data, to provide numbers, and had several conversations over the last several months with members of our legal team, with members of our risk assessment team that oversee our insurance. So we've definitely been keeping the lines of communication open, and we'll continue to do so.
And have you both provided them with incidents about crashes and insurance payouts?
Yes, I believe so.
Yes, we have. We've had those conversations and are moving forward as they deepen their study.
Thank you.
Mayor, I have a question.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you both for your testimony.
Resolution number 519, which is sponsored by all five members of council, so that's an important fact, directs PBOT to come up with a proposal for a TNC regulatory body, or some would call it a wage board, or that is to be determined. I'd like to ask each of you separately, on behalf of the companies that you here represent, do you support the creation of such a body, starting with Uber?
So we do support finding a way to accomplish the goals that you're looking to accomplish with that. So we will happily work with you to try to find an operational process, understanding what those motivations are. So yes, absolutely, we will work with you guys to try to find what that could look like.
And how about Lyft?
I think similarly, we support giving providing drivers with the opportunity to give input. I think that with the current structure, where there is a committee where multiple forms of transportation providers are represented, perhaps that could be utilized and expanded. Perhaps there could be another kind of party that's added on top of that, or another function or body that would also work towards those goals. So we are also open to having creative conversations around how to accomplish these.
Okay, so I just to be clear, that's a lot of words. Some questions do lend themselves to yes or no. I have not heard either of you say that you oppose the creation of this new body. Is that fair to say, Uber first?
We do not oppose the creation of a structure that, you know, I think the question is what that could look like, and we want to collaborate with you to try to find what's going to be most effective for all players.
Okay, very good. And Lyft?
I think we'd prefer to see the existing structure expanded, but are open to having conversations around the direction that council would like to go.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you both.
Thank you.
I forgot a panel, so I want to apologize to our private for hire advisory board members, but they're next. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Amy? My name is Mike Greenfield, and I'm the chair of the advisory board, and my position is the writing public. I have some remarks prepared for you, and then we have some other folks here. The arrival in Portland of Uber and Lyft changed the landscape for taxi companies and platform companies, drivers, specialized transportation companies, passengers, restaurants, hotels, and other companies that rely on these services. The advisory committee, with designated membership for owners, drivers, riders, has worked closely with Mark Williams and his staff. Mark and his folks have done a professional and effective job for Portland. While there are differences of opinion, members of the committee have worked together effectively and collaboratively. Our deliberations have welcomed public input, and our processes have been civil. Thank you very much for the opportunity to serve on the board.
Thank you, sir.
Sure. My name is Andrea Lenz. I represent a very different part of the advisory board, but I like to say it's still important. So it's been very interesting seeing the TNCs and Uber and the taxi company, or the TNCs, that is Uber and Lyft, with the taxi companies. But it also has been very informative for me to get my Giant Bikes regulations dialed in. We are a very unique thing, and we don't have direct competition with another industry, but it's been very, very fun to get it down on paper, to have black and white where we are such a weird industry. So I'm just thankful for the opportunity to sit on that committee and be able to have regulations that pertain to my smaller industry that still allows us to operate within the city street. So, yeah, that's all I got. Thank you.
So do you represent pedicabs in general? Or?
I represent pedal-powered transportation, so pedicabs as well as the quadricycles, which we finally got into code to have a specific. I mean, we could put them in as brew cycles, but I think quadricycles was a little bit more formal to have. So, yes, pedicabs and quadricycles.
Good, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Council. Steve Hicks, GM of Broadway Cab, and I'm also vice chairman. And I really don't have anything new to add. I agree with Mike. I would like to just throw in some thanks. You know, Mark has been at every meeting of our committee, and I know that because I've been at every meeting. So he's really worked hard here. And also, even though we've never met, Dan, your staff was available to me, Grum and Tia, so I thank you for that. And I'm just here if there are any questions I could help with.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And
thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fish has some invited guests as well.
Commissioner Saltzman, thank you for the courtesy of allowing me to invite a panel. And I'd like to invite the following three individuals to come forward. Tom Chamberlain, Oregon AFL-CIO President. Rebecca Smith, Director of Work Structures at the National Employment Law Project. And Owen Christofferson, who is a TNC driver. Ms. Smith, I think you traveled the farthest to be here, so thank you for that.
Only from Seattle.
Who would like to go first?
I'd like to go first.
Okay, Tom.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. My name is Tom Chamberlain. I am the president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, representing almost a third of a million members. I have lived and worked in this city most of my life. There are many things I love about Portland, but what makes Portland unique? What sets us apart from other major cities is our city's ability to take on difficult issues and find innovative solutions. Living wage ordinances, ban the box, investing in our infrastructure, and most recently, I have watched you grapple with homelessness. And today, you're bringing forward three resolutions that takes on the difficult issues of the evolving TNC industry. From your actions as city leaders, it is clear you want a Portland that works for everyone, where we have structures and systems and checks and balances that ensures that workers are not taken advantage of and are provided with livable wages. Over the last 30 months, we at the Oregon AFL-CIO have been working with Uber and Lyft drivers and have heard their issues and their problems with the current system. We have a TNC system in our city without checks and balances. From the driver's perspective, void of transparency, a system where workers' voices are not heard. The drivers of Transportation Fairness Portland are here today in support of 519 as amended, which will help us develop and implement a TNC board where drivers could not only address their grievances, but create a TNC system that is reflective of Portland's core value of livability. By taking this issue head on, Portland once again will be in the forefront of developing systems that have a national implication. Today, I am joined by Rebecca Smith, Director of Work Structures Portfolio at the National Employment Law Project, who has done extensive research on the impact of TNCs on our communities. The National Employment Law Project, as you may remember, was instrumental in developing Portland's Ban the Box ordinance, giving ex-offenders a better shot at a good job. Again, Portland led the way for the rest of the country. I'm also joined by Owen Christofferson, a driver for Uber and Lyft, who has been an active member of the Transportation Fairness Portland since its inception. And we'll talk to the many problems and issues faced by drivers. Unless there are any questions, I will turn this over to Rebecca Smith.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to be here today. I'm Rebecca Smith, and I direct the Work Structures Portfolio at the National Employment Law Project. We're based in New York and D.C., but I am a lifelong resident, too, of the Pacific Northwest, so why would I move to New York or D.C.? For decades, we've focused on the ways in which various structures of work, subcontracting, outsourcing, franchising, calling workers independent, contractors, affects income and wealth inequality, affects the ability of workers to come together and negotiate with their employers, and in some cases perpetuates occupational segregation. And more recently, as Tom said, I've focused my work on the on-demand or gig economy, talking to workers and worker representatives and reading the literature and doing some writing of my own. Assuming that projections about the growth of the on-demand economy and technological and automation-related job loss are correct, it's really incumbent on policymakers to do everything we can to ensure that the jobs that are generated by the new economy are good jobs, that all communities are served by new technology, and that city-level transportation planners have all the information that they need to plan across all sectors of transportation. Portland and most major cities across the U.S. have now had a few years of experience with the transportation network companies and grappling with those implications for workers and consumers and planners. And here are some of the things that we know now that we didn't know years ago. More and more, studies are showing that workers are just not making enough money to get by. The most recent study by Lawrence Michel of the Economic Policy Institute came out last week and found that Uber drivers earn about $9 per hour. And you'll hear larger numbers about what drivers earn, but once you discount for their driving-related expenses, once you discount for the fact that they're paying both the employer and the employee side of Social Security, plus their income taxes, plus some of the other expenses we've talked about today, that's how you get at that number. There's an emerging body of work that questions whether racial discrimination is hardwired into the star rating system, but we don't have the data to show us whether that's true or hopefully not true. There's an emerging body of work that shows that TNCs contribute to congestion as passengers migrate from public transportation to private transportation. And while TNCs provide some flexibility to drivers, they also use a variety of behavioral nudges to get drivers to drive when and where they want, and that amounts to a de facto scheduling system. The companies have at the same time vigorously resisted, on the one hand, treating their workers as employees and paying their taxes and covering them under labor standards, and on the other hand, negotiating with their drivers over terms and conditions of employment. TNC drivers, as I'm sure you know, have complained in a variety of forums, have staged strikes, a brief boycott campaign, talking about their campaign, unilateral changes in pay, unlawful deductions, unfair deactivations, and on and on. So while cities like Seattle and New York are also exploring options, I think Portland now has an opportunity to really dig deeper into the impact of TNCs on drivers and on communities. You have deep city knowledge about how the transportation network companies work and the implications of the rise of TNCs. You have broad authority to act. And I understand that Portland, like other cities, is grappling with issues around inequality and the access to technology for all your residents. So that's why we applaud this resolution. In particular, its focus on developing a new oversight committee that includes drivers' voices, that focuses on things like wage disputes and transparent accountability and equitable dispute resolution. I'm reminded of a saying that comes up sometimes in my house that if drivers are not at the table, then they risk being on the menu. And so I really applaud bringing drivers to the table to have a say in what those standards are. And finally, TNCs generate and use a broad variety of data, and I applaud your efforts to gather some of that data. In particular, I noticed the zip code level data that showed access throughout Portland, and I understand that it's much more important to have much smaller areas to look at, and that's why the pickup and drop-off data, because as we all know, zip codes are big. Zip code level data covers a lot of different neighborhoods usually. So Portland can be a model for the country in how to create good jobs equitable transit systems and in a way that brings together all of the stakeholders. And I urge you to adopt the resolution.
Thank you very much. Mr. Christopher, welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm a Portland State student, and I love this city. I started driving for both TNCs in the fall of 2015, and it was a great way to balance work and school. I often have people telling me they wish they'd had this opportunity back when they were in school. I've driven tens of thousands of miles for them, given thousands of rides, worked snowstorms and holidays. And I'm before you here today to say that although those of us who drive for TNCs enjoy some of the most foremost technological innovations, TNCs have skirted labor protections, many of which have been fought for over decades. And today we have the opportunity to give TNC workers a much-needed voice with this board. I also come before you all today to speak for the many drivers I've talked to who feel that they will face retaliation from the companies for speaking up, as this has happened in Seattle multiple times. We need a voice because we face a perilous work environment. Our earnings are erratic and often fall below minimum wage after driver expenses, and between high insurance deductibles, driver safety, and many other issues, the liability and risks that we assume as drivers is significant. These risks can push us into poverty or homelessness in the event of a catastrophic event such as an accident. And a quick word on insurance. Lyft's insurance deductible is $2,500. This is an outrageous figure for low-wage workers, and I personally have known drivers in this insurance system who have had to wait up to 9 months and file multiple claims with the Insurance Commission of Oregon just to get their vehicles fixed, just so that they can start earning money again. A few months after I started driving, Uber and Lyft cut rates with no warning. We have no guarantee of protections from future rate cuts, so at a moment's notice, we could be earning even less. We need a voice because we have no recourse in the event of an unfair deactivation or other grievance we might have with the company. The TNCs have unilateral authority to determine our ability to work, and us as drivers have no ability to hold them accountable for their actions. We need a voice because, as drivers, we are exempt from federal labor laws, including minimum wage, workers' compensation, unemployment insurance, and the right to collectively bargain. Because of the extensive driver issues, we need a way to hold these companies accountable, to protect our earnings, our safety, our liability, and to make sure TNCs work for everyone in Portland. This board will give us that voice. It will allow us as drivers and other members of the community to truly have a seat at the table when it comes to determining what TNC policy will be best for all Portlanders. I strongly encourage you all to support the creation of this board. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz.
I have a question. The deductible is $2,500 even when there's a passenger in the car.
Yes.
Thank you. That's interesting information.
Ms. Smith, your testimony is actually was very compelling to me. Do you have that electronically? Could I ask you to send it?
I did type it up, so I'm happy to send it to you, yes.
If it electronically, that'd be great, and I'll make sure my colleagues get it. So thank you very much.
Thank you all. Thank you.
Very good. So thank you, everybody, for your patience. Now is public testimony. Carla, how many people do we have signed up?
21.
21. Good. So 3 minutes per person, name for the record. When you see the yellow light come on, that means you have 30 seconds left. When the red light comes on, that means your time is up. Please stop. Do not make me the microphone cop. I don't like doing that. So please, when the red light comes on, that is your cue to finish your testimony so that everybody else has their fair shot at it. Commissioner Fritz.
May I just to clarify, I do have a written version of my amendment, which is to Resolution 519, which I've passed out. It's what I just said at the beginning, but I now have it written out.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner, for that. As is tradition here, if there are elected officials, people with small children, people with special needs, please find your way up to the council clerk, and she'll get you into the lineup sooner rather than later. Okay. First three, please.
Are Darren Campbell, Steve Entler, and Noah Ernst, and they'll be followed by Katie Kost, Eileen Brown, and it's Alan or Adam Hernandez.
Very good. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Commissioners, my name is Darren Campbell. I'm the state and local lobbyist for Radio Cab Company. Over the last couple of months, we've met with either you or a staff member in your office to show what battles the taxi industry and drivers are facing. Where we have a long list of requested code changes, I would like to focus on just a couple and submit them into the record. Public safety should be the number one priority. That means having the best possible policies in place. Having a background check system that works and is effective is imperative. In 2017, I wrote legislation for the Oregon State Legislature, and during that process, I had the ability to learn a lot about background checks. The idea of allowing a company to self-check and then putting drivers into service for 30 days until a city verifies it is not only dangerous, but has been tried by the Portland before, and it was decided then that it allowed too much opportunity for the wrong person to get through. We have already seen the Uber background check fail miserably, so we all know allowing the wrong person to be out serving the public in an environment where people are their most vulnerable is a mistake. The safety of the community cannot be played with, and because a multi-billion-dollar company needs to get drivers faster, it should not be played with. I'm submitting a common sense rewrite for the proposed code, one that will get the background check to a place that makes sense and clears drivers prior to their first interaction with the community, one that requires fingerprint identity checks via live scan, a system that is available in at least 17 locations around the state of Oregon, many of them in Portland, and something that PBOT can have installed in their offices. There's no reason not to do this right now. I do want to mention two other items that would have an immediate impact on our ability to compete in a fair marketplace. Putting a cap on the number of vehicles a TNC can have operating at any given time in the app, and placing a minimum on fair pricing. I believe these are both issues which would be supported by the taxi industry and drivers, as well as TNC drivers who are looking for better working conditions, as you just heard. We can no longer allow the saturation of the marketplace with drivers working for pennies. Drivers are not able to make it out there, and this city should not be standing by allowing this to happen. I'm more than happy to answer any questions you may have regarding the items in code. I have just touched on a couple of things I felt were most important. However, we have many issues we would like to address and hope we will have more time to work with staff to accomplish these things, something that we felt we have not been invited to the process nearly as much as some of our competitors. So with that, I will let my colleagues go.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Go ahead, sir.
My name is Steve Entler. I'm the general manager at Radio Cab. And he's mentioned we've met with your staff or yourselves over the past number of months. My primary concern is the insurance aspect, and it was one that was a great concern of yours roughly 3 years ago. And I happen to bring along something that I wrote quite a long time ago, and has some bullet points. Basically, you know, Uber requires its drivers to have personal auto liability insurance. And then they lowered the bar in the code to reflect that same requirement to the taxi industry, which made no sense whatsoever. Subsequently, it got changed later on, but some of the things didn't make any sense. The code has a requirement that Uber and Lyft must warn its drivers that their personal auto insurance might not be valid. Why doesn't the code simply require that drivers provide adequate and valid personal auto insurance? And the code also requires an acknowledgement from the personal auto. Why doesn't the proposed code also require an acknowledgement from the personal auto insurance company authorizing the part-time commercial driving activities of its insured driver? Why doesn't the code address the problem of insurance coverage confusion caused by vehicles providing service for Uber and Lyft at the same time? And why doesn't the code require that the commercial insurance information carried by Uber and Lyft be presented at the scene of an accident rather than allowing Uber and Lyft's drivers to show their personal auto insurance information, as now happens most of the time? It's highly unfair, and it passes off a lot of the costs to other personal auto insurance carriers. With the city council meeting in August of 2015, a lot of the commissioners were very concerned about the inadequate coverage provided by Uber at that time. And Commissioner Novick back then even went so far as to put Uber on notice that it would have to secure a higher limit of coverage for period one. Never happened. As a matter of fact, as I scanned through the code, nothing has happened. There is no changes in any of the code revisions that have been presented to you. We've provided a number of items that could be included, but we've been largely ignored by the Bureau. So I brought them to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, my name is Noah Ernst. I'm a superintendent at Radio Cav, and I have deja vu a little bit testifying before you here today because 3 years I testified twice before the City Council to comment in part upon how we could not get meetings with PBOT. We couldn't get our voice heard. And here I am again today listening, as I did 3 years ago, to Uber and Lyft talk about how extensively they have worked with the Portland Bureau of Transportation and how open the Portland Bureau of Transportation has been to them. And we have emails going back, Mr. Entler and myself, a year from PBOT promising to meet with us to discuss proposed code changes, and those meetings have never happened. In fact, when you asked Mr. Williams about what input the taxi industry has, he said, well, they could testify at the advisory committee. That's a big difference between being asked to testify at the advisory committee meeting and having extensive meetings and contacts with PBOT. You can tell all you need to know by the fact that Uber and Lyft were invited to testify with no time restrictions, and yet the taxi industry has to run on the clock. Additionally, you can tell all the influence the taxi industry has when Mr. Williams told you that the advisory committee either tabled or rejected some of his code changes based on the invite of the taxi representative, but yet he thinks you should do them anyway, and they're part of the code changes. We get nothing. I am here to talk to you about the fee structure, one of the things that the advisory committee tabled. While we do sometimes have said that the 50-cent ride fee was a handout to Uber so that they would not have to pay the per vehicle fee and the permitting fee, to put those fees on just the taxi industry is inherently unfair. You create a barrier to entry into taxi driving for taxi drivers by forcing them to come up with money up front that they would not have to come up with if they drove for a TNC. It shifts the burden of paying fees to the drivers from the public who can least afford it. Our company is surviving. Our drivers are dying. They are going broke, and they are leaving the industry. And if you are not going to do anything to protect the income of the drivers, such as reducing the number of vehicles or setting minimum rates, at least don't create a barrier to entry and additional fees on them. I also would ask the council to reject the changes related to driver training. While it makes sense for PBOT to request particular training before issuing or renewing a permit, putting out training things willy-nilly any time during the year and threatening to revoke people's livelihoods if they don't comply is inherently unfair. And it creates, again, additional burdens on the drivers.
Thank you. Thank you, all three of you. Next three, please, Carl.
Next three are Katie Cost, Eileen Brown, and Aiden, maybe, Hernandez.
Good afternoon. Would you like to start?
Oh, sure. My name is Eileen Brown. I am the TNC driver representative on the Private for Hire Advisory Committee. So obviously I speak to a lot of drivers. And I have since 2014 when we first came to Portland. I mostly drive for Uber. I started driving because I was stuck on a street corner at 4 o'clock in the morning waiting for a taxi. Not the taxi's fault. They were just overwhelmed. Today I drive in my spare time. I run a warehouse that employs contract drivers. I've given her a handout I'd like you to take a look at, if you don't mind. I tried to speak to Commissioner Fish about it yesterday on the radio. I understand your concerns about a driver board. I don't think that in the community you realize how many contract drivers are on the road every single day doing thousands of different chores. Every name on that, and that is just a minuscule list compared to what's actually out there. That many companies are using contract drivers every day to provide goods and services around this community. But there's no concern for them. We're only having this conversation about TNC drivers. I'm not sure why that is. But I know in my industry, who employs some of those people, we don't need a driver board. We need better conversations with the companies we're contracted with. I've had several problems with Uber over the years. I went right to Uber and had my problem solved. I don't know that spending, especially ride fee money, on a board is going to solve any of those problems. And I don't need, no offense to the AFL-CIO, I don't need them to speak for me. I'm capable of speaking myself, just like you, I'm sure all of you are, don't have a board to address your concerns with your employers. I don't think that's a necessary thing to spend the ride fee money on. I would rather see it go to accessibility for WAVE. My personal story, being stuck on that street corner and getting to the opportunity to drive in Portland, today I mostly drive at night because I feel that driving people who are intoxicated or impaired is a great reward to me. And in the very beginning of this, the people that got in my car would say, you know, if it wasn't for you, we would have pushed the envelope. We've driven drunk. We would drive drunk. We might not go out. We might not spend any money in the community. Today, I never hear that. Today, so many people would shame their friends. They've never even thought of doing something like that. I feel good about what I'm doing in this community and how many people we've helped keep the drunk driving rates down, safe, reliable rides. I think let's take that money and spend it for something a little more useful than trying to have a communication that's not really necessary. We should be communicating with Uber and Lyft.
Thank you.
Can I, Mayor, just if I could?
Sure.
We were on the radio together. And
yes, we were.
today you've confirmed what I thought yesterday, which is you're a terrific advocate for your point of view. And I appreciate your comments yesterday, and I appreciate seeing you live today.
Ditto.
And I thank you for this list. This is not the place to air the argument, but I would just say that where there may be the heart of the disagreement we may have is that in our community we have people that we acknowledge are clearly employees. I made that comment yesterday about the host of the show, that he's clearly an employee, and then we sort of review during the downtime all the recourse he has to administrative agencies, to legal process, to all kinds of things, because as an employee, he has a whole host of protections. And contract employees generally understand what the rules are. What has struck me, the more I've learned about this, is that TNC drivers essentially are in limbo. Depending on who you ask, and in the state of Oregon, it would depend on whether you ask the labor commissioner, the legislature, or a court. There is a wide range of opinions about whether they are actually employees or independent contractors. Because that status is therefore unclear, I'm persuaded that at least on a transitional basis, we should have a place, a forum, a venue where people can be heard, because it's not entirely clear that they have any other place to go. I'm not here to score points with you, because I think you're terrific. You were terrific on the radio. You're even better live. But that is one of the concerns I have, is that I believe uniquely this category of workers falls between the cracks. And your rights should not depend on who you go ask, whether you're an employer or an independent contractor. But no one has decided that question. And so as long as they're in legal limbo, I think there should be a place to go to get justice, and that's why I'm persuaded
I think
a wage board is useful.
Myself and all the drivers I speak to don't feel like that. We do feel like independent contractors, and we're comfortable with that role. And the drivers that we employ at my company, like Umpqua Bank, uses independent contractor drivers to move their mail around, is a perfect example, or OHSU for specimens. Those are all independent contractors, and they're all very happy with the way things are going. I love driving Uber and Lyft, and I love working in that other field that also employs contract drivers, and I've never felt the need that I had to go to a board board or...
Here's the good news. If we do establish the board and we set up a mechanism, we will not compel you to come before it. You are.
Thank you. In fact,
we won't have the
Thank
capacity.
You for the opportunity
we
to
won't
speak.
Have the capacity to deal with over 10,000 complaints. So it's nice to know that someone is satisfied. But we've heard from a lot of people that feel like they'd like to have a voice, and this is maybe an imperfect solution, but it is an option. But hats off to you for your advocacy.
Good afternoon.
All right. My name is Katie Coast, and I was born and raised right in here in Gresham, and I've been working in downtown Portland for the last 10 years doing hotel accounting. About 2.5 years ago, my best friend, who lives in New York, finally set her wedding date. Well, I needed to raise some quick cash to get the money to fly out there. So I went to Facebook and asked, how can I quickly earn about $1,000 in order to cover for the expenses? My friend Max said, I think you'd be a great Uber driver. You're personable, you love your city, and you know it quite well. So I signed up. Within a month, I had enough to travel out to go to the wedding. And so I'm here today in order just to voice how I haven't had any of the issues that I've heard about. I am here because I love driving for Uber. About a month and a half after starting driving for Uber, my husband lost his job. And so I was like, all right, I'll step up my game. I signed up for Lyft, and things have been running smoothly ever since then. So I drive for both companies to this day. After about 6 or 8 months of driving for both companies, the radio in my car went out. So I went in to trade in my car and get a new one. I decided to go with a fully electric option. So now not only am I driving part-time for Lyft and Uber while still maintaining my hotel accounting job, I drive a fully electric vehicle with zero emissions. So I am very, very happy and proud to be an Uber EV advocate. I love talking about the electric vehicle aspect of it and the fact that I have none of those additional charges and very low maintenance means more money in my pocket for every trip that I do.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate your being here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Adan Hernandez. I drive for both Uber and Lyft. And I'm grateful that I'm able to do so because I lost my job a year ago. And this has enabled me to support my family. So I'm grateful. That being said, there are some things that I feel that we do need a board where we can be heard, mainly because the things that there's I don't feel that there is a place that, unless we're talking about right now, the representative back there that can actually hear and make a difference. That's how I feel for both companies. But the bottom line is that we don't make $18 an hour. I think it's more close to $15 an hour. If we were making it to go to a wedding, and I'm going to use your example because it's the same close as mine, If I'm making it just to get ahead and pay my debt and work very hard to do so, then it's okay because I will be able to make would be able to work very hard up to 12 hours a day and make the money that I need to pay my debt. But it happens that when you lose your job and you have to support your family, you need more of a steady income. You cannot be working 12 hours a day indefinitely, 7 days a week or 6 days a week, to be able to survive. That's not reasonable. And the fact that we have to do so and we're recommended to do so, it's just not reasonable. Human beings are not supposed to be sitting in a car for 10 to 12 hours a day just to make what in reality to me after doing all the accounting is about $7.50 to $8 an hour net. And this is a math that can be easily done by both companies. So I wish there was a place that I could go and talk to the people that can make a difference, that can hear me, and I wouldn't be here. I would not be here. And the rest of the drivers are hurting because they don't make enough money, making a big effort and working a whole bunch of hours. Commissioner Fisher asked a question, and it was very interesting to hear that the need to actually have how many people actually take the ride. Commissioner, I can guarantee you that unless it's a share ride, which accounts for only like maybe less than 5% of the rides in the entire city, including the airport, The companies don't know how many people. We can have four people, we can have three, we can have two or one. Mostly, 95%, I would say, just one person in the car. Because it's cheaper to ride our cars than to take a max for four people going from one bar to the other downtown Portland. And that is a fact. So they share the ride. That's the only share that they do. Young people are having fun.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank the you. Next three are John Orr, Kat Entler, and Gail Larson. And they'll be followed by Scott Burge, Amanda Rain, and Diallo Bennett.
Good afternoon. Would you like to start for
sure.
us, please? Thank you.
Hello, my name's Gail Larson. I'm a driver for Uber. I appreciate the time to share. I kind of wanted to just mention something from the actual end customer perspective. I gave a ride to an elderly gentleman last month, picked him up at Fred Meyer, was taking him to a residence, and during the course of the ride, he commented quite enthusiastically how pro-Uber he was, that it was such a great service. He had lost his license 4 months earlier due to his advancing age, and he was so thankful for a service that was easy to use and that he could afford. He said, you show up in 5 or 10 minutes, and unlike previous transportation services he had used in the past, it was very dependable for him. When I dropped him off at the residence, he brought a tear to my eye because he said, don't want to get emotional here, he said, my wife of 67 years is in this adult care facility. She's been here for 6 years bedridden, and the best part of every day is when I get to come here and kiss her and hug her. So, of course, brought a tear to my eye, but after the fact, I felt so good when I left that rider because I knew that he had a service that enabled him to see his wife of 67 years every day. So I wanted to share that with you, and that as you make all these decisions and regulations and such, and you've heard from drivers and taxi companies and the representatives from Uber and Lyft, that you also think about the end user. Because I agree with the woman who talked about drunk drivers. I have three adult daughters who regularly use rideshare so they can go out on the town, have a cocktail, and not have to worry. I experience it with the people that I pick up. So I think it greatly benefits society to have that kind of a service available. And that gentleman's story I really wanted to share because there's a lot of people who have not only appreciated this service but have become dependent on it. And it makes me feel good. I wish I could show you the notes that riders had left on my profile that are just fantastic, that speak to a lot of different perspectives. And my time's almost up. I'm very happy being a driver. I'm happy to see that the council's interested in making sure safety and all the concerns that have been addressed here today. But don't forget the end user, the customer. Let's not make it hard for them to take advantage of a good thing to our city.
Thank you for your testimony. It's great testimony. If you ever have the privilege of picking up that gentleman again, can you please write down some of his tips for keeping a marriage like that for 67 years? That would have been the first question I would have asked
him. My thought was, that is love. If I could find somebody to love me like that man loved his wife, I'd get married again.
Yeah, he's a jewel. Thank you for sharing that story. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. My name's John Orr. I'm a radio cab driver. Been doing it 4 years. A year and a half ago, I started driving a wheelchair-accessible cab. So, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, thanks for having me up here to talk. A couple quick points. First, I was a little bit frustrated hearing the head of PBOT repeat Uber and Lyft talking points, talking about how great they are for providing jobs for the city. I'm not sure if she's heard the famous Travis Kalanick quote, former CEO of Uber, where he talked about how eager he is to get rid of, quote, the other dude in the car. Both those companies are heavily investing in driverless vehicle technology, so I feel like proponents of TNCs touting how they provide jobs for people, you know, that's really not a an argument that's going to be around much longer, as at least as far as their investment is, if their investment is any indicator of that. Quickly on the city spending some of this revenue they're taking in from our ride fees on training program. A lot of the people I drive with, I've been at it 4 years. A lot of the people I drive with have been doing it decades. I feel that the time on the road and knowledge of the city is the best training, and that the companies need to be in charge of their own training, and that's what lets companies differentiate themselves. One thing that does, I feel like this is subsidizing Uber's high turnover and need for training new drivers, and that's their responsibility, Uber and Lyft, to train their new drivers. Now, what I've come up here to talk about has already been touched on. We just want an equal playing field. You know, insurance, background checks, safety issues that creates. There's caps, trade dress. Response time issues have been mentioned, and I think someone from Travel Portland was discussing the improvement of service, but that's not necessarily, you know, this isn't a controlled experiment. We didn't see what would happen if we tripled the cap or, you know, increased the number of vehicles 10 or 100 or however many fold we did. We just introduced TNCs and all of a sudden we have 10,000 vehicles instead of 500. So we can't say that was TNCs. We could just as easily say that's the result of having as many vehicles on the road as we do. But I think Uber drivers and cab drivers, briefly to wrap up, have a lot of the same concerns, and it's our ability to make a living doing this. And setting caps and setting pricing would accomplish this. Merriam-Webster Law Dictionary defines predatory pricing as the practice of pricing goods below cost and incurring a loss in order to reduce or eliminate competition. So your local cab companies might not invent the next great app, but we do strive to set ourselves apart and serve our customers and have customers continue to choose us by doing what we do well. And we can't do that if the playing field isn't equal. And I wish I had more time because this wheelchair program fundamentally is adding to that.
Thank you.
The fact that Uber customers can use their app, but my customers ordering a wheelchair accessible cab cannot call Radio Cab is a huge flaw, and I cannot emphasize enough how unfair that is. That is part of our customer experience, calling us and not calling the city. And by taking that out of our control, the experience our customers get when they speak with our staff versus your staff, then that is fundamentally skewing the playing field.
Thank you for that input. Appreciate it. Thanks.
I apologize for going over.
No, I was curious. I would have asked a follow-up question anyway, so I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And welcome.
John, you took up all my time.
I'm sorry, Kat.
No, you're starting.
No, you get your own time. You get your own time.
Sorry, Kat.
I'm just teasing anyway. I'm Radio Cab Company. I work for Radio Cab Company for approximately 30 years now. And the drivers at Radio Cab are my family. You know, we all love each other and do things to help each other. We also are owner-operated, and it started out with the vets from World War II, you know, forming this company. And now we have drivers that are homeless. We have drivers that are living in shelters. Some even have some blue tarps. And it's just because we're so overwhelmed with between, you know, 15 and 20,000, which is probably a more accurate number of Ubers on the street. And, you know, and it's not really the drivers. It's, you know, because, I mean, you know, being here is just knowing that they're not making any money either. So there has to be a way to fix this so that everybody can survive. You know, we used to be able to, you know, put our kids through school and do all that stuff, and we can't do that now. In fact, sometimes food is a little scarce. There's several drivers that have food stamps now. And, you know, as far as the insurance goes, you know, commercial insurance so that when there's an accident, everything happens the way it's supposed to. It's a safety measure. By the way, I left my notes home, so I don't mean to be jumping around. But and the biggest thing of all is the public safety. You know, please, please, you know, don't let a driver go on the streets until they have a proper background check. I don't know if anybody, you know, seen a thing on Megyn Kelly a couple of weeks ago. It was a whole room full of women that were terrorized by Uber drivers. And I just think that would be such a poor thing, and that would leave, I guess, whoever made the decision responsible for somebody, you know, being hurt. And of course, the roads, another thing, you know, by the time I get to work, I'm doing this because they're so bad. I mean, I'm shaken because there's so many holes. And with the extra 10 cents, you know, per gallon on the gas, I haven't really seen much happen in a year and a half. And also, you know, because we're required, and I guess we're not required anymore, well, it's not too, you know, bad of an idea for Uber and Lyft to maybe get their own accessible vehicles.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you, all three of you.
Thank you.
Next three, please, Carla.
Are Scott Burge, Amanda Rain, and Dayalo Bennett. And they'll be followed by Tori Powell, Jeanette Thiebert, and Guy Ocker.
Good afternoon. Sir, would you like to start?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Scott Burge. I don't live in the city of Portland. I'm actually the mayor of the city of Scappoose. I didn't feel like my elected position should get me to the front of the line, though. I'm more than happy to wait in
Thank
line.
You. Appreciate that.
I've been an Uber Lyft driver in the Portland area and the greater metro area, since it's really not just Portland where we drive, for the past 2 years. I do it as a supplement to other income, but it also gives me the flexibility to get paid what I paid you to speak at the OMA conference a few years back, zero, because most mayors don't get paid anything. If you'd like to double my income, please.
I think, in fact, last I checked, there's something like two or three mayors in the state of Oregon that are paid a full-time salary for the job.
It's very
correct. Most of the small-town mayors are either a small stipend or it's a volunteer office.
And my guess, sir, is that your job is pretty much a full-time job as mayor.
Well, no, we do have a city manager, but I do, you know, I get 20, 25 hours a week where you're in meetings, you're discussing policy that's going to come up, a lot of the same things that you do in your office, but we're doing it as a volunteer basis.
By the way, Mayor, how would you grade us as a deliberative body?
Well, I didn't know if there was a signal when we were supposed to start chanting or how that worked, you know. I did like, you know, I really did, you know, running meetings, I really do like the thumbs up, thumbs down as people are commenting, because it's interesting in a way that people can express themselves without trying to shout you down and interfere in your meetings, because I think that's a concern that we all have in meetings. So, and this is going to cause me to run way over my
time. Carla stopped your time about 15 seconds ago.
Okay.
As a courtesy.
Well, thank you. I would think that on, and I've had some initial conversations with other mayors that I know, because we all know each other and we're I think that some of us would like to have a greater look at, I mean, City of Portland regulations are going to impact Uber drivers that are out in Scappoose because they have to get certified through here or out in Beaverton or Tigard or the surrounding areas. So any regulations that the City of Portland passes is going to have a wider impact, whether it's intended or not. And, you know, I think sometimes we would just like to have a voice in what those impacts are going to be, because we don't, A, small towns like Scappoose don't have the capacity to do what PBOT has. But we also, you know, we might recognize that we like the fact that, or I like the fact that it is a self-regulated, in that every person that gets in my car rates me. Every person that gets in my car, I rate, or at least the person that ordered the ride. So there's a kind of a dual rating system that says, I'm doing a good job, or that rider's kind of sketchy. And we can kind of see that in active conversations by drivers are, there's riders that if they have too low of a rating, they won't get picked up. They will just not take that ride because they're not seen as good riders because of either they're causing problems or whatnot. And so for me, I like that type of self-regulation where we're self-set up. You know, and it's a pretty high threshold. 4.6 is below that. A driver can be deactivated. So you have to be on your game, and you have to try to provide a good service. The income side, from my